o'clock.
Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to my... I'm so excited! This is actually my second live Blog Talk Radio, Live with Jonathan Alden show, and today I am actually joined by a great panel of hosts and friends and all the above. We have Rusty Meacham, Kansas City Royals friend of mine. When I was a ball boy for the Royals at the age of 16, I was cut in high school. I was devastated. I didn't care about anything in life, but then I got the ball boy job, and Meacham actually treated me like I was a younger brother, so we'll have more on that. So we have Dewan Day, an ex-college teammate of mine, who actually one day I was just Googling. We know we all Google people. So I was Googling, and I was like, he's in the big leagues! Oh, my God! So it was really cool to see somebody that I actually played with in college in the big leagues. More on that. We have Scott Durham. Durmer, my love was next to his my first year playing professional baseball in Madison, Wisconsin. And I have to admit, I was nervous, Scott. Scott thought I was a little cocky, but I was scared. Crap was playing minor league baseball. This is the first time I tell you guys. Every day I thought I was going to get in the league. When I was playing, you know, my first year I got drafted in the league tryout from the Evansville Otters, who my friend Ronnie is going to play for this year. But anyways, they released me after like 2 weeks, and I got drafted in the first round draft for playing for them. But so every day that I played professional baseball, I was so scared I would get released. So we'll talk about the revolving door in baseball in a little while. I have Rachel Roth. Now, Rachel is a diehard baseball fan. I mean, she actually went 1 year to opening day with the Royals and the Cardinals. So Rachel's like, in my opinion, like, who does that? Like, that is epic. That is epic. So we'll have more on that in a little while. So we're going to talk about some really cool topics today. We're going to talk about just kind of what it's like to put on a jersey in the big league and in the minor leagues. What it's like to have a dream. When I was six, I wanted to play professional baseball, and I was told I couldn't do it. You know, I was too small, or, hey, Jonathan, you need to think about a real job, you know. I was like, my real job's playing professional baseball. So I got in trouble from my teachers. But nowadays, I know, I'm not going to name any names here, but I know a child that I actually grew up with in their household. The minute he was born, we knew that he would be a big leaguer. And it's a business nowadays, and we'll get into more of that a little bit later. But the child was a first-round draft pick last year. He signed a $3 million contract. But we all knew from the minute he was in diapers that he would actually make it. Like I said, I'm not going to get into the name or the family because we're not talking about that today. But that'll be on another show in the future. But it works. It's business. And Rusty Meacham and also Benny do academies and Kim. They'll tell you about how strategic it is nowadays getting children to the big leagues and even in college and scholarships and minor league ball and how all those things work. So I'm excited, you guys. I had my first Blog Talk show scheduled yesterday with a couple celebrities, and it just didn't work out right. But now we know how to do it. We even have our theme music out. We're going to go on the theme music again. We have theme music for our show, you guys. Here's the theme music. Here it goes. Check it out, guys. The theme music. We have the radio show here on Blog Talk Radio. Here we go. So my first guest, Rusty Meacham, is no stranger to big league Royals, and let him tell you who else to play for. Rusty, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me, man. It's an honor to be on it today.
So, Meach, tell us about your big league career and kind of, you know, the teams you played for, and just, I guess, in about a couple of minutes, just tell us what it was like actually living your dream in big league baseball.
Well, it was beyond my wildest dreams, that's for sure. You know, I started out as a kid and, you know, had some pretty good ability, and then just got surrounded by some good coaching, you know, all the way up, and got my first opportunity in 1991. I was drafted by the Detroit Tigers, and you know, went on and signed with them, and kind of went up the ladder, and I made my major league debut at 23 years old, and you know, that day's special, the first time you make it. But then I got sent down after a little bit of time up there, and kind of bounced around the minors again, and then got another chance again, you know, with the Royals. And the second time around is very special because the first time is awesome, but to bounce around and then get there for a second time was really great for me. And I just tried every day to go out there and work hard and just be the best baseball player I could be and try to be a role model to those young kids out there.
That's awesome. Now, like, I like to ask a lot of guys when I'm actually filming for my TV shows, when I'm actually, you know, on the field, leaders and guys of that nature. And one of my favorite questions to ask ask guys is, like, what was it like for your big league call? Because I know myself, you know, playing, getting, just knowing that I sat next to Scott Dermott, who we'll bring into the show in a little while, and I'll never forget the coach, the manager actually at the time, we call him Skip, was an ex-big leaguer. We call him Dirty Al. But he actually had Stanley Evans, who was the assistant coach at the time for Madison Black Wolf in 2000, come around, and they actually tapped players on the shoulder, and the players actually went into the Skip manager's office, and then he saw the guys come down with a long face. And I'll never forget, I was sitting next to Scott Dermott. He was my locker buddy, and I looked straight into my locker. I think I could barely see Scott out of the corner of my eye, and then I think Scott said something to me, but I was, like, in a zone. And you could see, you know, the Stanley Evans, the assistant coach, you know, coming around, tapping us on the shoulder, and they went into the manager's office, and they were getting released. And then I got tapped on the shoulder, and I was just, like I said, the year before that, I made the team. I mean, I got drafted out of the Frontier League tryout, and I made the team, you know, for 2 weeks, and I got released. And then after that, it was just hard to get on that year, so I lost 1999. 2000 was my first year, but they called me into the office. And then the manager, Al Gallagher, said, Flea, which was my nickname, which Benny will tell you in a little while. He goes, Flea, are you scared of cats? And I go, huh? I go, excuse me? I was looking down. I was so, like, mad, and I had emotions going on. I thought I was getting released. He goes, are you scared of cats? I go, no. He goes, welcome to the team. Your host only has two cats or three cats at the time. So that was, like, my first taste of actually knowing that I was going to play professional baseball. So what was it like, Rusty, I guess maybe 24 hours going into your big league call-up?
What was it like? It was kind of hard to hear you.
Oh, what was it like the 24 hours before your big league call-up?
Before my big league outing?
No, before you got called up. Like, you're the minor league, as a minor leaguer. But all of a sudden,
I got you. Oh, it was awesome. I mean, yeah, awesome and stressful. I remember because it was kind of you know, kind of crazy for me because I got called up and then it got kind of put on hold. So, you know, you got a bunch of emotions, you know, running through your mind at the time. But you know, very, very nervous, but at the same time excited. And you know, I remember my major league debut. I'll never forget it. And my major league debut was in Tiger Stadium against the Cleveland Indians. Hey, I'll never forget.
That's awesome. So what was it like just knowing that, you know, you're no longer a minor leaguer? You're actually, you know, living your dream in the big leagues, and now you're, for the rest of your life, going to be called a big leaguer. What was it like, just the emotions that day, the 24 hours leading up to that, and just knowing that after that outing, you were a big leaguer for life?
The greatest feeling in the world, because I knew all the hard work that I had put in and had finally paid off, and I heard you talk about it earlier. People always said, you remember me when I played, I was a very small guy, and they just didn't think I was going to be able to do it because they didn't think I was able to hold up a whole season, and I held up 20 years no problem. So that's the biggest thing for me, you know. I mean, people saying I couldn't do it, and you know, I ended up having a long career. So
and DeJuan Day played for the White Sox. He was my college teammate at Jackson State University. DeJuan, like, let's just dive into the same question for you. Like, you played, you know, at a couple small colleges. You can tell us about that as well. And then all of a sudden, you know, you played minor league ball. But then tell us about the 24 hours before you got called up, and what was it like for you to know that, oh, my God, I'll be a White Sox big leaguer in a couple of hours. What was that like?
Oh. Well, first I'd like to say, man, I haven't talked to you in over 10 years, and I can say you haven't changed one bit. So I've been over here giggling and laughing. I wish I had your energy, man.
Thank you. That means a lot. That means a lot. Thank you so much, man.
But it was kind of similar. Mine was surreal. I was actually in AA, and I had a good run. I was pitching extremely well. I had just come off my first big league camp, and it was a really good camp. I got a call from my farm director during our off day. I was at Barnes & Noble, and honestly, I thought I was just going to AAA. I was happy. I knew there was no other reason why he would be calling me, you know, considering how well I had been doing and, you know, the chatter that I heard. And he gave me a call Sunday evening, and he asked me if I had a passport. And, you know, I told him I had just gotten it It had literally just arrived at my parents' house about 2.5 hours away in Jackson, I think on that Wednesday. And so he asked me if I had a passport. I told him, yeah. And he said, well, you're going to need it when you go to Toronto. Welcome to the big league. And I was like, I couldn't even speak, man. I mean, I never get excited over stuff. Everybody that knows me know that. Like, I don't show that much emotion. I'm pretty even keel all the time. And I said thank you probably about 37 times. We got off the phone, and I sat in my truck, and I seriously cried for about 5 straight minutes. You know, it was a happy cry. You know, then I immediately called my parents. They had to drive, hop in the car and drive because I needed my passport. You know, they got there that night. I had to pack up my apartment, and I got about 3 hours of sleep. Seriously, and I was on a plane early that next morning, headed to Minnesota. And I actually made my debut the same day. It was Memorial Day. That was 2007. And like I said, I had no sleep, but I was not tired one bit. You know, like you're out there taking BP, and it's like you don't even feel your legs. You know, you're just running around, shagging fly balls. And to that point, I hated shagging. You know, that was probably the most excited I've ever been running after fly ball. Because, you know, everybody out here knows pitchers hate shagging for all you hitters.
Yeah, when I was a ball boy, you know, the pitchers would actually tip us money and actually tell us, you know, hey, do the bucket for me. Because doing the bucket, for those of you who don't know, and we're going to have a show actually later on, either next week or sometime soon, about clubby life. I'm going to have some of my other clubby colleagues that I was a ball boy with for the Royals actually on a future show talking about what it's like to be in the clubhouse as a clubby, putting on a professional baseball uniform. Actually, we're like the extra player on the team, you know, because we're on the field every day in the locker room. But they would actually tip me to actually do the bucket and actually shag, and they'd be in the clubhouse because, like you said, they hate shagging.
Thank God I was a reliever, so I didn't have to get on the bucket. The bucket is reserved for starters. You know, whoever's starting the next day, they have to do the bucket. Early, I would say the first half of the season, it's kind of fun. You know, you're running after balls, but when you're playing in a Southern League or somewhere else where it's about 95 degrees and 100% humidity, that's the last thing you want to do is sit out there chasing balls.
Now, I'm going to bring in Benny Castillo. Benny was my manager in 2001 with the Sioux City Explorers. Now, that was nobody knows the story, but I'm going to tell you guys a story live of nationally for the first time. So, in 2000, I played for the Madison Black Wolves, and then, you know, we'll talk about more of that later. But then in 2001, I was actually with a big league buddy in Chicago, which we won't talk about the names, like I said, today. But anyways, I was in his house in Chicago, who played with the Cubs. I didn't have a contract, so I literally called every minor league independent team manager, GM, that summer. And then my first finally got a call back from a guy named George Scott, which you probably know the one. And George Scott gave me a deal for $500 a month to play for the Rio Grande Valley White Wings. So I drove my car from Chicago all the way down to Rio Grande Valley, Texas, Harlingen, Texas, which is in the middle of nowhere. Well, anyways, I get there, and the GM at that time was Mike somebody, and he says, hey, we have $300 for you. I'm like, excuse me? I go, I thought it was $500, because we have $300 for you. Take it or leave it. And, I mean, I drove, like, I don't know how many hours it was, but it was, like, forever from Chicago all the way down to, actually, they were playing in Ozark, the Ozark Mountain Ducks at the time in Ozark, Missouri. So anyways, I told him I'll take it because, well, if you don't want to take it, you know, I understand. You know, I wouldn't do it myself. It's tough, but, you know, I want to play baseball, so I took it. So anyways, long story short, I'll never forget this. I couldn't make it on $300 a month. I had an apartment in Orlando. I had a car and all these other things. And all of a sudden, long story short, later on in the season, one day he said, you need to get a roommate. I'm like, a roommate? I go, at a hotel, I go, well, what do you mean? He goes, because we can't have you staying in the hotel any longer. So then all of a sudden, later on, he actually, they had a roommate in my hotel room. So at least I had my own hotel room for a while. But then I had some guy I didn't even know in my hotel room. making $300 a month, it was just tough. But I was playing professional baseball, so that's all I cared about. I had some players filling my cup and my glove, and it was crazy. But then all of a sudden, I'll never forget. I had my phone that night. I took it to my car because I didn't know who this new guy was in my hotel room. And then I woke up and I was like, I should check my phone. Just, you know, phones are like our companion nowadays. We don't go anywhere without our phones. So anyways, I get to I get up, I go to my car, open my glove box, and I turn my phone on, and there's a voice message from Harry Stavrinos, and he says, "Flea, I'm not sure if you're looking for a contract, but we have an opening for you in Sioux City, Iowa." So I said, "I'll take it." So what I actually did was I went to the GM, and I said, "Hey, you know what? You were right when I first came here. You know, it's going to be tough, so I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, $300 a month, having to get a roommate like you told me a couple days ago is going to be tough, so I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to have to get my release." And I took off and went to Sioux City, Iowa, and had an amazing summer, and Benny Scott Steele was my manager. So, Benny, tell us all about your experience in baseball, professional, and on all those things.
Hey, Flea, how you doing, buddy?
What's up, Benny?
What's up, Benny?
What's up, guys? Hey, Flea, I haven't talked to you in 20 years, man. Wow. I guess I'm going to say the same thing of your other host. Your energy is unmatched, and we always loved you for that. You talked about your career a little bit and some of the heartaches you went through, and you were a guy that we always pulled for because you were just a guy that never gave up, and you were a little guy. And my buddy Rusty, what's up, Flacco?
What's up, man?
You have him on the show, you know, and first we got to talk about these nicknames, you know. Your name, I think you came with your name to us. I don't know if Harry gave you that nickname, but Flea, I'm sure it has to do something with you being a menace on the bases because you were one of the fastest guys I ever coached to this day, probably the fastest guy. We used to watch you run, and we couldn't keep up with your legs. You were so fast, man, and that wasn't your strength. That was your strength, just on the bases. Flea, come in there and wreck a game, and you were fun to watch, buddy.
Thanks, but it means a lot, man. You're a great manager, and it was just awesome, you know, just having you as a manager. But so being that Scott Durham's on the phone, Durham was, like I said, my locker buddy in Madison, Wisconsin. Durham, you probably know where the Flea came from because you guys named me Flea in Madison. So, Durham, welcome to the show. Durham, tell us what it's like being – you played minor league ball. So what was it like for you in minor league baseball, Durham?
You know, I never got the opportunities other guys did to get into the big leagues, but you know, playing minor league ball and getting to the highest level I did, that was my big leagues, and that's the way I took it every day. I got on the mound every fifth day and just went out to battle and give my team a chance to win. And you know, that Flea thing, I believe that was from Brian Fitz, wasn't it?
One of you guys, I woke up one day and all of a sudden my name was Flea.
Yeah, so you know, playing independent ball, it was a blast. You know, the everybody always asks about those 18-hour bus trips from Schaumburg to Winnipeg, and you know, they were pretty brutal. But you know, given the opportunity, I'd probably do it again tomorrow.
So we're gonna take a break, and then we're actually gonna be joined by Rachel Roth, who's actually an avid baseball fan. She actually has, like I said, went to two opening days. One year with the Cardinals and the Royals. But we have to ask. I know she wears Cardinals hats, I think, and Royals hats. But I don't think it's legal to actually be a fan of the same more than one team in the same state. I know. I don't think you can actually do that. Actually, in New York, I don't think you can do that in Florida. I don't think it's even legal in Missouri to cheer for the Cardinals and for the Royals, but we're gonna find out. We're gonna find out if that's really a law or if I'm just making that up. So stay tuned to that live with Jonathan Aldridge Blog Talk Radio Show coming at you live right here. Today is Saturday, April 25th. It is 1:19 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are on the phone, on the air, live with Rusty Meacham, ex Major League Baseball player, Dwan Day, ex Major League Baseball player, Scott Durmer, my ex minor league baseball buddy and a former minor league baseball player, Benny Castillo, former minor league baseball manager. And right now we're going to bring in our first caller. This is my caller, Rachel Roth. You're on the phone. Here you go, Rachel Roth. Welcome to our show, Rachel.
Hi, Jonathan. Good to
talk with you. It's been a long time.
Thank you, thank you. You are my first official on-air Blog Talk Radio caller, so for the rest of your life, I will always say that you are my first one. It's kind of special because we actually went to high school together. You were fierce. I think you played basketball, and something about, I guess, your love of baseball. And I don't know, the guy, can she actually cheer for the Royals and the Cardinals, or is that illegal to cheer for more than one team in the same state? What do you guys think about that?
Illegal.
I know. Being a Cardinal fan myself, I'm not going to put a Royal hat on.
But they made World Series. They made the World Series last year.
Yep, that's right. I know there's a little bit of a backstory, Jonathan, but I'll let you throw the jabs. That's a fair one to throw out there.
So, Rachel, tell us about you. You have baseball. You got some big leaguers on the phone. You have some minor leaguers on the phone. Managers on the phone. So. What do you want to know about baseball? Tell us what you like about baseball. You know, especially from a female standpoint. You know, I'm actually involved with a female, and you know, I've dated and had girlfriends and things like that. So a lot of times I get the whole thing like baseball's boring. I don't like baseball. I like football and basketball. But you're female. You like baseball. So actually, guys, what do you guys think about that? A lot of girls say that baseball's boring. So how do you guys feel about that?
It is boring unless you have a
pretty title.
What's that?
I think everybody said the exact same thing. It is boring.
What do you think about that, Rachel? What do you think?
Oh, man. You know what? I tell you, first thing first, it is a big honor that you invited me to call in on your show today. It's really exciting for me to have the opportunity to talk with all you guys, especially every single one of you have a lot of experience in baseball, and it's just really great to be a part of this conversation. I will start with saying that my passion comes from a very young age for baseball. You did mention that I played basketball in high school. That was exactly right. But I actually, my passion for baseball comes from playing softball through my years. And I started at a very young age with softball, and went up, played in high school, and then went all the way through college with that. Obviously, I didn't make it to the USA Olympic team or anything beyond college, but, you know, that's truly where my passion for baseball came from, and I just really enjoy the sport a lot. I understand and get a lot of the drive that you guys had going through, you know, the times that you did, and just have a lot of respect for everybody that's out there and works hard. And I'm definitely, I just got to tell you guys, I am Royals through and through, and I always have been.
There you go. You heard it. She's Royals through and through. So let's just dive into some topics, you guys, and let's just do the conversation and go. So, you know, it's a radio show. We're on the air live, so we got to make it a little spicy. So Chris Rock just blasted baseball. Anybody want to take this one? Going once, going twice.
I'll take it. I don't think he's so much blasted it. I think he just told the truth, man. Like I've been involved with baseball on a professional level for a little over 10 years now, and all the facts that he threw out, they're true. He was being honest. You know, I've also done a couple reports with Major League Baseball. It's kind of sad. You know the way the statistics have gone as far as like African Americans being in baseball now, but the rest of it, I agree with them. I don't like how they take the fun out of baseball. You know, I mean, there may be some people on this line right now that'll disagree, but you know, that's what I think that's what I kind of meant by saying that it's boring. You know, I like when things exciting things happen. I was a pitcher, never once got mad at somebody or felt like someone was showing me up. It's just, to me, like, that's part of sports. You know, I know baseball purists would never agree with that or anybody that's, you know, conservative. But, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. I think it's good for the game. I don't think it's terrible at all. I think it'll help get fans. I think it'll help bring some kind of excitement. You know, one of the issues was Yasiel Puig, you know, stopping his bat flip. And I think that adds flair to it. You know, it's like as long as you're not being disrespectful, then I feel there's nothing wrong with any of that.
Anybody else? Same question.
I feel I guess the same way. You know, being a pitcher, if I threw a four seamer right down the middle of the plate and he got barrel and he hit the ball in the gap 450 feet, whose fault is it? Was, you know, that was my bad for throwing that pitch there. So, you know, I agree. The bat flips and stuff, I think it's part of the game. This game is, you know, it's evolved into a game of excitement. And I think, you know, the stuff, the way it's going, I think I agree. I mean, I very rarely watch a baseball game on TV anymore.
You guys are all on the phone with me, so you guys will get to hear this first. This is actually something I've never actually talked about publicly in any newspaper interview. I did it once for a magazine interview. So I'm actually looking at a cover of Onyx Magazine, dated 2008, I believe. I was on the cover of it, and the headline says, "What is happening to the black players in Major League Baseball?" So I actually was honored to be on the cover, but I actually brought the story to the magazine because Jamil Weeks and Ricky Weeks actually are brothers, and they actually are playing for Milwaukee at the time, and he was in Miami at the time. But we'll get into that later. But I'm actually working on a new independent baseball league, and I've talked to Kyle Farnsworth and some other guys about this league. Pudge is very interested in talking to me about it further. But we'll talk about that later. But I think baseball needs a new direction because, you know, a lot of times I think Rusty and I were talking earlier today, and a lot of business people that never played the game are actually controlling the game. So, Rusty, what do you think about that? Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, business people controlling the game that never played baseball. What do you think about that?
You know, like I said earlier with you, it's a lot of the problem is who's in the front offices today, you know, that don't know what it's like to play down there on the field, and, you know, more guys should get opportunities that don't get the opportunities. You know, they've never put a uniform on and don't know what it's like to be across the white lines, my opinion.
So, Neach, you do academies. I think it's called the MLP Players Academy. You also train pitchers and do private lessons. You have a long toss program. And I believe your company is called Flacco 28 because the Latin players, which Benny, you called him Flacco. The Latin players called him Skinny. So, Benny, you also do camps. And I think, Benny, actually, you do camps. You have academy. You've actually run, just like Rusty has an academy. And you're also building a program in the Dominican. So, Meach and Benny, about 1 minute, tell us about your programs and your academies.
Well, I run an academy back here in my hometown of Stuart, Florida, called MLP Players Academy. And I run it with former players Brooke Fordyce and Kurt Abbott. And we have a bunch of travel ball teams that we train these young players. And then I do my own separate pitching thing. And the greatest thing for us is to watch the turnaround of these kids that we move on out of this program to college. And it's every year we have like five or six sign in full rides. So that's the gratification we get out of it.
How about you, Benny? Tell us about your academies. I know I saw something, I think, on your Facebook page where, like, you have an intense program with these kids. So tell us about your program and also what you're doing in the Dominican.
Yeah, same as Rusty. You know, I have an academy, and I'm fortunate enough to have an education degree. So I'm a coach / teacher. I homeschool my kids. And, you know, the same thing, just trying to get kids into college. Some going to pro ball. But my main concern is trying to get an education, a free education, and then I'm building one in Dominican Republic with the same concept, trying to help kids and their families. So it's a blessing.
Nobody knows more people than this guy, Benny Castillo, man. He's one of my best friends ever in the game and very knowledgeable, and people are lucky when they get to work with him, that's for sure.
Yeah, Benny's well-connected.
And I mean that.
Thanks. And we have a caller. Somebody just called in. We're going to take a caller. And then we're going to hear all about Scott Dermer's bat, Cubby. So we have a caller. So, caller, welcome to the Live with Jonathan Aldridge show. Hello, caller, you're on.
Yes.
Who is this?
This is Fontella Jones.
Oh, Fontella, hey, what's up? Fontella played minor league ball as well. He played in the Northern League. So, Fontella, welcome to the show. And, Scott Dermer, tell us about your bat company real quick.
It's a buddy of mine, Chris Corso, out of Chico, California. We played in that Western League for a few years when I was in Salinas. And he got tired of getting the wood that he was getting, and it was breaking after three or four APs, and he decided to build, get a little machine, and so he started doing his own bats, and it's called the Sandlot Sticks, and it's we're going nationwide now, so it's all over the place, and it's blowing up, and we'll be here in Omaha for the College World Series for a 10th selling Sandlot Sticks.
That's awesome. Well, this is also something we have for today's episode, you guys. Hopefully we can have all you guys back on this sort of later date. Thank you guys so much for joining us today on my second official live with Jonathan Alders blog talk radio show here live. And actually, I think we have a few more seconds left. They didn't submit this second left. So, Fontella, tell us about your experience, Fontella, playing baseball professionally.
Well, playing baseball professionally, you know, it was always a beautiful thing. I mean, first off, I want to say congratulations on your show. You know, we played college ball together as well as played against each other. So it was always a pleasure.
We're roommates in college. We're roommates in college. Don't forget that.
Yeah, we were roommates in college, and as well as you know, we had another name for him. It was a flea. You know, y'all had the flea. We had Skeeter Rabbit. So he was actually a menace on the base path, you know, and he was one of the fastest guys on the team. And it was always a pleasure playing with him. So, you know, my experience playing baseball, you know, minor league, you know, it was. I heard some of the things he was talking about, you know, about the amount of money we were making and everything. You know, it was demeaning, you know, because sometimes, you know, you had people in the front office, like someone said earlier, has never been on the other side of the ball. And, you know, it's hard to go out there every day and play for peanuts. But, you know, you can't take that away from people. So it was always a pleasure to play, you know, like I said. And I know somebody mentioned earlier about, throwing, you know, tipping your hat to somebody if you throw a ball right down the middle of the plate. Yes. If you pimp it, hey, I made a mistake. So, you know, all those things go into that because I was a pitcher. You know, I was in three roles, middle relief, started as well as closed. So, but you know, like I said, it was a pleasure playing with all them guys.
So. Now, Scott, I had a rush. I thought they were going to disconnect us after the 30-minute limit here on Blog Talk Radio, but they didn't. So we're actually still going. So Scott, plug your back company again, because I was kind of rushing because I thought we only had about 10 seconds left. So Scott, talk about your back company one more time and what you guys and what you do. I think you have some kids that actually play. So tell us about how important fundamentals are for young people growing up in the game, and also about your back company.
You know, again, it's called Sandlot Sticks. We sell wood anywhere from size 28 up to a 35, and fungos and softball bats and all kinds of different stuff. Again, we'll be in Omaha here. This is going to be our big first test to see what we can do for the College World Series selling these bats. But, you know, talking about this travel ball, I got two boys that play 11 and 10, and, you know, people think we're crazy on what we spend for these kids to play baseball anymore. But the way I look at it, like everybody else, is that this is hopefully an investment for their college and for them to play some college ball and then, you know, get their school paid for. And then anything after that is a blessing. Anything after that's a bonus.
So, Rachel, I want to ask you, because it's kind of cool having somebody who hasn't been in the game, you know, playing like as a professional player or played, you know, at minor league or major league level. And I want to just kind of hear your take on, like, you know, the way the game is going from a fan standpoint. You know, we have, you know, obviously steroids is not a secret anymore. So that's something that the public knows about. You know, Chris Rock mentioned that the racism in baseball, it was 19% black, I think, in the 80s, and now it's down to 8% or less. And I just have to say that my friend Ricky Weeks is not getting a fair shot in Major League Baseball. And I don't know why that is, but that's a whole other story. But I just want to throw that out there because Ricky Weeks, he inspires me because he's about my size, but he actually made it as a first-round draft pick, and he actually made it in Major League Baseball. But just knowing somebody like that and knowing the family just means a lot to me because they're he's a very great guy. And I know my journey in baseball was extremely difficult. I don't even watch baseball anymore, to be honest with you guys. I cover games because it's fun to cover games, but I don't watch it because I was so hurt by baseball. I guess like being in a bad relationship that I do not watch any games at all. I just do it because, you know, for what I do as a TV show host and as a radio show host now. But what is it like, Rachel, like for you as a fan, just knowing all the problems that baseball has?
You know, Jonathan, that's a great question. There is a lot going on in baseball these days, and I know the game has changed a lot over time, too. I even professionally and in the corporate world, I learned to adjust. Change is always happening. And so whether we like it or not, it's a reality of life. And I don't know. I just try to do my best to accept things as they are and encourage, you know, the athletes that are out there to do their best and perform the way that they know how and try to stay positive with it, that's for sure.
So, Nish, you mentioned something in regards to the Nationals. You guys had a franchise record, and something happened. So tell us more about that, Nish.
Well, the first couple of years I was a pitching coach in Vermont for the Lake Monsters, which is Washington's rookie league club. Our first year I was in charge of 16 pitchers. We had a 3.81 ERA, which was a franchise record we set. We set a franchise record that year in strikeouts. And then the following year, I was welcomed back there, and we beat our strikeout record that we set that year previous, and we almost equaled our earned run average of 3.81. We had a 3.84, and I had Jordan Zimmerman off that team. Brad Peacock were in the big leagues. Catcher Derek Norris, Steven Souza Jr., Espinoza, I mean, on and on off that team, and I was taking a train home, you know, taking my time coming back to my hometown, and I get a call from the farm director that we're going in a different direction, and I haven't been coaching since.
Wow, wow.
So I sit around and I wonder, you know, what did I do wrong? But that's just the reality of baseball. It's, to me, it's, I think it's who you know, and you know, I just don't fit in there right now. And one day, hopefully, I'll get my opportunity again.
When you do me, think about me, because I want to be your right-hand man in some capacity. But what I want to do, actually, you guys, like I said, I've been working on my own professional independent baseball league for about 8 years now. So, really, I think it's just a matter of getting the right people to bring it to the table. And, like I said, Kyle Farnsworth, who actually played for the Royals, and he played for a lot of different teams. Kyle Farnsworth is a good buddy of mine, and we go way back, and he's very interested in the league. He's friends with Johnny Damon, so we'll get that. I've emailed Johnny Damon. I emailed the Trump, Stuart Raw, who's a billionaire, and a lot of guys have my emails, and we've been working on this for 8 years, so maybe this is the time for it with Chris Rock, you know, saying what he said. Like, I agree with you, DeJuan, that a lot of those things are actually true, but maybe we can all come together and help form an independent baseball league and make some changes. Like Rachel said, reform and change is good, so even Rachel, maybe you could, you know, help us with this league because you're a fan and an ex-athlete. And things like that. But maybe that's the answer, you know, Rusty. Maybe we can all come together. I know Scott wants to do some things in business and entertainment. And Benny, you know, is avid, like you said, Benny knows everybody. He's a great coach and just a great guy. So maybe we can all do something ourselves. What do you guys think about that?
Sounds great, Flea. You know, baseball's a good game. It's a good game whether you're black, Hispanic, white. It's just a good game. You have to keep that child attitude. And I think, you know, the business part is always going to be there. But what I try to do now with the youth is I just try to teach them the right way to play and to have fun with it. And, you know, baseball is going to be around forever. So we have to be – we're baseball people. I'm always going to be a baseball guy. So I try to do the best that I can to keep the game in a happy mode with the energy. I love coaching guys like you, guys like Flacco. You know, I was his coach at one time. So we just got to do our part and try to keep the game alive, you know. And that's my job, I think, you know.
No, I think that, you know, like you said, DeJuan, Chris Rock mentioned some things about the racism and entertainment and things like that with baseball. But let's talk about a whole different aspect of baseball. Like I said, I'm colleagues and friends with Kyle Farnsworth. He's in, like, excellent shape, and he wants a contract this year, but he's not getting an opportunity. That's not cool. I talked to Johnny Damon in an interview when he was on The Celebrity Apprentice earlier this year. He only has a few more hits to get to 3,000 hits. Now, he's not taking steroids, and he's a good guy. So, I mean, why can't he get a contract? I talked to Pudge Rodriguez, you know, on the phone a couple years ago, and we text, you know, and email, you know, occasionally. Like I said, Pudge is interested in my independent baseball league idea. But Pudge wanted a contract, you know, before he actually announced his retirement. He didn't get a contract. I talked to Manny Ramirez on the phone last year. He's a colleague of mine. And, I mean, he got a contract last year with the Cubs, and he still played it. And he's, you know, he's in his late, I think he's in his 40s. So, I mean, I'm almost 40 this year, and I know that I'm in great shape. I actually was working with some kids, you know, like I do every now and then, teaching them the fundamentals and things like that. And I think I'm in better shape, and I eat 100% organic, so I think I'm in better shape than I ever was.
Come back.
when he was in his 40s. So when you got to think about people playing in their 40s and guys like Kyle Farnsworth, you know, Johnny David, what do you guys think about these guys still getting an opportunity but not getting an opportunity? What do you guys think about that?
I think people like Johnny Damon, they should get an opportunity. If he's those few hits shy of 3,000, like, that's a big milestone. That could be a big accomplishment, something that he could brag about and be happy about for the rest of his life. It doesn't take that much to give that to somebody. You know, as far as the other people you mentioned, like you mentioned Manny. Now, I'm a big Manny fan. I've always been a Manny fan. I was a Manny Ramirez fan growing up. But he's got some history. You know, he had history with PEDs. Like, that's never been part of Johnny Damon. I just, you know, another thing, like, I have conversations with people often about there's no loyalty. And I think that's a prime example. Like, you know, I don't know who you can identify Johnny Damon with. Me, personally, I identify him more with the Red Sox than the Yankees. With teams like, that could bring people out to the game. Like, if I was in charge of an organization, I would want to be a part of that. I would give somebody that opportunity, but, you know, that's not my decision to make. And those are decisions that I'll never understand that are made by the owners.
Anybody else?
You know, what's amazing to me anymore is that we grew up watching guys get 3,000 hits and 500 home runs and 300 wins, and that's instant Hall of Fame numbers. You know, and then you got somebody like Biggio who's got to get, you know, two or three different tries after 3,000 hits. And, you know, back then it was an automatic thing. And nobody, you know, you watch these shows on MLB Network and nobody cares about that 500 home run milestone and 3,000 hits anymore. It's all about that plus-plus crap, whatever, you know, whatever they talk about those stats on there. I just think that the game that used to be is just not there anymore. The stats aren't as important anymore.
Well, it goes back to what Rusty said, you know, it goes back to what Rusty said about just guys running the league that just they going with these numbers and these educated guys that are running the team from Harvard. And, hey, I'm all for that. But, you know, they have a bit on the field. And for a guy like Damian not to get a shot, it just all goes back to guys running it with these numbers. They plug numbers in a computer and they come out with a figure and they're going to go with the young guy and blah, blah, blah. The game is just going a different route. It's more of a business, and we have to face the fact that's what it is right now.
Yeah, they're giving the young guys the shots. They're giving the younger guys.
It's hard to adjust. It's hard to adjust to that growing up the way we did, playing the game we did and watching the guys that we played, you know, prime example, you know, Boggs and George Brett and Pete Rose and all these guys. Some of those guys, you know, because of their talent level at that time, might not even get a shot in today's game.
Well, that's
amazing.
That's been a very important issue that we brought up. So let's close out. But before we close out, I want to go one by one. I want to ask each one of you guys, if you had to pick one highlight of your baseball career, what would that be? So let's just start with Meech. Meech, if you had to pick one highlight of your baseball career, what would that be, Meech?
Oh, man, easily being the last guy to face Dave Winfield in his last major league at-bat in Jacob Field, Cleveland.
Oh, that's awesome. Winfield was a cool guy. I remember he hit one ball when I was a ball boy.
Never forget that guy.
Yeah, he was just fierce, and he was a great player. That's awesome. So, Dwan, Nate, what was your highlight as a major league baseball player? Or your baseball player?
And it was... You know, I would say the biggest thing that sticks out is a name you just mentioned, and that was Craig Biggio. And it was my career was cut short. You know, I got hurt a few weeks after I got called up. Actually, the night that I got hurt, I struck out Craig Biggio. You know, I was on a full count pitch through a slider, and he just stared at me and walking all the way back to the dugout. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I talked earlier about never getting upset about being disrespected, but I kind of laughed because I know why he stared at me. It was because I threw six pitches and I threw him six sliders.
That's awesome. Talking pitching, so Scott, if you had to pick one highlight of your baseball career, Durham, what would it be?
You know, I felt like I had quite a bit of accomplishments at the independent level. But, you know, going to camp with the Padres in the late 90s, watching you know, Tony Gwynn take hacks and, you know, being about 3 feet away from him, watching him swing the bat. And, you know, it, on all kinds of different levels, you know. And Tony Gwynn, didn't know him personally, but just watching him swing the bat and the way he played the game. And then, you know, he's the one that